6 years ago, I made a film with Kathy Newman for Channel 4 called The Prince and the Paedophile about Jeffrey Epstein and Prince Andrew. In the wake of that film, I had a series of very lengthy telephone conversations with Virginia Giuffre, who was Jeffrey Epstein's best known victim. Virginia told me all the men she was farmed out to, and that in itself is a lengthy and horrifying list of men. And it would not surprise me at all if President Trump was striving to protect those people.
I don't understand why the Jeffrey Epstein case would be of interest to anybody. It's pretty boring stuff.
These people who gathered around Epstein were not outlandish freaks. They weren't outcasts. They were a very representative sample of the American business, political, and academic world, the American elite. So it's hardly surprising that both parties, when they're out of power, are demanding openness and transparency around this case. Once they're in power, seem to be a lot less interested in all the names coming out.
He's dead. He's gone. It's all been a big hoax. It's perpetrated by the Democrats. And some stupid Republicans and foolish Republicans fall into the net.
Jeffrey Epstein was very probably connected to the intelligence services, to American intelligence services, and to Israeli intelligence. He quite possibly had compromising material, tapes, recordings of powerful men. All of this will have contributed to why he got away with his actions for so long. But also you have to see Epstein as an albeit extreme example of the power and the privilege and the impunity of the tiny elite of fabulously rich people who effectively run the world today.
Are you still talking about Jeffrey Epstein? This guy's been talked about for years.
Now, Virginia was certainly aware of Donald Trump as a sleazy presence around Jeffrey Epstein and moved in exactly the same world. In fact, there was clearly a period where they were quite close friends, although she was clear that she was never abused by him. Although Virginia was recruited by Jeffrey Epstein while working at Donald Trump's Florida home, Mar-a-Lago. In a magazine profile in 2002, Donald Trump described Jeffrey Epstein as a terrific guy, likes women almost as much as I do, and many of them are on the younger side. Trump and Epstein seem subsequently to have had a falling out, but they were absolutely part of that world together. Epstein died in a prison cell. Today, Donald Trump is president of America. After coming to power, Trump got the Justice Department to release the Epstein papers. I don't think there was a single document that hasn't been sitting on my computer for 6 years. It was a completely bogus exercise. And actually, what was significant was the documents released by Trump's Justice Department were heavily redacted, whereas the versions we had were unredacted. I have the flight logs and I have the little black book. So Alexander Acosta, who was Trump's Secretary for Labor in the first administration, back at the time Epstein was arrested in 2007, 2008, he was the U.S. Attorney for Southern Florida. In his hearings to take the job of Secretary for Labor for Trump, he reportedly said that he had been told Epstein belongs to intelligence. Leave him alone. It seems to me absolutely clear Epstein had connections to the intelligence services, probably to Mossad, probably to the American intelligence services. Of course, Ghislaine Maxwell's father, Robert Maxwell, is well known as having had extensive links to the intelligence services. Robert Maxwell was buried on the Mount of Olives in Jerusalem. His funeral was attended by 6 former heads of Israeli intelligence, and he was eulogized by the serving Israeli Prime Minister, Yitzhak Shamir, who said he has done more for Israel than can today be told. Robert Maxwell very definitely moved in that world. Whether Jeffrey Epstein had connections to the intelligence services in the same way that Robert Maxwell did, I should think it's quite likely. So I woke up on the morning of April 26th to the terrible news of the suicide in Australia of Virginia Giuffre, who's the best known of Jeffrey Epstein's victims. The thing about Virginia was the abuse she suffered at the hands of Jeffrey Epstein was not the first abuse she had suffered. She'd been abused throughout her childhood. One of the repellent things about people like Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein is they home in on, they have an instinct for the vulnerable, for people who, in Virginia's own words, have been primed for abuse. She was angry, obviously, with Jeffrey Epstein. She was angry with the phalanx of women that surrounded Jeffrey Epstein and were his enablers and facilitators. Particularly, she was angry with Ghislaine Maxwell, Mary fucking Poppins, she used to call her. She would say, I'd never have gone to that man's house if it hadn't been for that woman with her posh English accent. And of course, also During those long conversations, we talked about the men she had been farmed out to. She was abused by Jeffrey Epstein. She was abused by Ghislaine Maxwell, who she was quite clear was an abuser, a very sadistic abuser, as well as being a facilitator. Virginia told me she was then abused by a whole string of men who Jeffrey Epstein presented her to them, sort of on a plate as a sort of gift. Prominent men from the worlds of business and politics in the United States, obviously Prince Andrew, world leaders. And what was extraordinary was you discovered that when very powerful men who can pretty much have whatever they like in life are offered a 16-year-old girl on a plate, bizarrely, what they seem to want to do is to hurt her. The number of them who were sadomasochistic was extraordinary. One of them very nearly killed Virginia. Virginia was a very strong woman, apart from this one man who she was terrified of. She used to say, I'd go for him if I didn't have children, because I have children. I won't do that. I remember talking to Virginia about her watching the Prince Andrew interview. She was furious. She was so angry watching that interview. And what angered her was his arrogance, his belief that he would get away with it.
I can tell you categorically, I don't remember meeting her. Nobody can prove whether or not that photograph has been doctored. I didn't sweat at the time because I had suffered what I would describe as an overdose of adrenaline in the Falklands War when I was shot at.
And I remember she said, that 1%, they believe they are above the law, that 1%. Now, you listen to other Epstein victims talking at length in interviews, and they say exactly the same thing. The thing that absolutely enraged them and repelled them was the elitism of Epstein and all of the people who surrounded them. The belief they were above the law, the belief they existed in this gilded club of wealth, power, influence, and connections. It was a gilded club they belonged to, and very firmly, you did not. And anyone who did not belong to that club was worthless. We had Jeffrey Epstein's infamous little black book. It was enormous, hundreds and hundreds of names. The first thing to understand about the little black book, and this isn't commonly understood, is it was really Ghislaine Maxwell's book. And you can tell this because the numbers, for the most part, have American prefixes, but they don't when it's a British number. So for the most part, it's her book. Virginia used to point out Jeffrey was actually a rather weird, strange, nerdy person. What Ghislaine did was she was his sort of social lubricant. She opened up social worlds to him. This was Ghislaine's entry point to his world. It was her selling point. And she was keen to show off. The people who matter in the Little Black Book are people who also appear in the notorious flight logs and also in the Little Black Book who have numerous numbers. There are over 20 telephone numbers connected to Bill Clinton. Donald Trump, 14 numbers. Alan Dershowitz, 11 numbers. There are 7 numbers for Ehud Barak, the former Prime Minister of Israel. Also, 10 numbers for Peter Mandelson, who is now the British ambassador to the United States, of course. There are 2 pictures, of course, that exist of Mandelson with Epstein. And they're not pictures at some public event where they just happen to be standing near each other. The first one, they're out shopping together. They're the only 2 people in the picture. The second one, it's clearly Epstein's birthday. Someone is bringing him a cake. Jeffrey Epstein referred to Peter Mandelson as Petey. That was Jeffrey Epstein's name for Peter Mandelson. He called him Petey. Why was Peter Mandelson spending time with Jeffrey Epstein? It's a really interesting question. We have to be crystal clear. There is absolutely no suggestion that Peter Mandelson was involved in any criminal wrongdoing. One suspects Mandelson was attracted to the whole world of Jeffrey Epstein, and certainly the image that Jeffrey Epstein sought to convey of moving in a mysterious world, a mysterious closed world of power, influence, and connections. I remember talking to one man who knew Epstein well, and he said, my memory of Jeffrey is he was always smirking. He was always smirking. I said, what was he smirking about? And he thought for a bit, and he said, he was smirking because he knew things you didn't. He wanted to convey the image anyway that he was part of a closed world of connections and power and secret maneuverings that you could never enter. He knew secrets about an awful lot of people, and obviously there's speculation around his death. He had been placed in a cell where he was on suicide watch. He was taken out of that cell. His cellmate was taken away. And on the night he died, the two prison officers who were meant to be regularly checking on him slept through the night. The American government has now released surveillance footage from the prison where Epstein died. 3 minutes of that surveillance footage are missing. Those are the bald facts. It's clearly an extremely suspicious death. Jeffrey Epstein was a financier. He'd originally worked at Bear Stearns. He'd been sacked from Bear Stearns for sort of fiddling his expenses. In the 80s, he worked in a very murky world, in the world of arms dealing, and I suspect made lots of connections there. He then went into businesses with this man called Steve Hoffenberg, and they basically ran a pyramid scheme. In the early 90s, Hoffenberg was sent to prison for quite a long time. Jeffrey walked away scot-free, one of the early mysteries in Epstein's life. He then worked as sort of financial advisor to Les Wexner, who was the CEO of Victoria's Secrets, and seems to have made a lot of money from him. Around 2006, 2007, the Palm Beach police down in Florida, where he had a home, launched a very serious investigation into Epstein and gathered a load of information on him, a mass of evidence on him. Now, had he been a poor black man, he would have spent the rest of his life in prison. There's absolutely no doubt about that. He got a ridiculous sweetheart deal, about a year in prison. He had day release. He was actually able to go and work at his office. He got a punishment that in no way fitted his crimes at all. Justice didn't catch up with him again for more than a decade until he was arrested in 2019. Epstein died in 2019, but the coterie of men who he farmed these young girls out to, for the most part, have just walked away scot-free from all of this. Virginia was very frustrated that the legal cases in the UK didn't go anywhere. Now, under legislation at the time, as I understand it, Prince Andrew actually wasn't guilty of a crime. The age of consent was 16, she was 17. Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell potentially were guilty of a crime, trafficking. But having been initially greatly encouraged by the attitude of the police, suddenly that went nowhere. Virginia was never able to establish why, but one can only assume that pressure was brought on the police from above. So Prince Andrew, it's reported he eventually paid £12 million to Virginia's charity to settle with Virginia. Now, of course, this is money, ultimately, that comes from us. I mean, Prince Andrew never earned 12 million quid in his life. So it was essentially us, the public, that ultimately paid for Prince Andrew's alleged crimes. Now, as for Virginia, it was clear that in recent months she'd been having a bad time. She posted recently following, apparently, a car accident. I think she was going through a very messy divorce. I actually reached out to her on the number I used to have for her, but I didn't get a response. Inevitably, there are conspiracy theories around her death. Her family don't seem to feel there is anything suspect or suspicious about her death. But what I would say, Virginia used to say to me, sometimes I don't get the exact date right, sometimes I get the locations wrong, but believe me, you never forget the face of a disgusting old man grinding away on top of you. And I think the faces of those men were etched into her soul. She was a very brave, courageous, fun woman. She and the other women were told they were nothing. They were worthless. She took back the power and transferred the shame. But within her, she clearly carried around this enormous, enormous weight, the enormous weight of a whole childhood of abuse. It would seem that in the end, that weight crushed her. And even if they were not directly responsible for her death, Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, and all of the other men who abused her, all of whom have walked away scot-free, they are all responsible for her death. Virginia Giuffre's story is a casebook study in how the powerful, the wealthy, and the privileged are all too often not called to account for their crimes. And it flags up more than ever the need we have for independent media outlets like Double Down. And I would urge you to contribute to Double Down News through Patreon.